Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 199. It's all gravy. Hey, everybody, thanks so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I am Roger, your host, and this is the podcast all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun. And as I release this episode, it is Saturday, November 20th, 2021, just less than a week now before Thanksgiving here in the U.S. For home cooks, that's the big game, right? If you're responsible for cooking Thanksgiving dinner, that's the one you have to be ready for. Can be stressful, can be a lot of work, and we're going to talk a little bit about that today. You know, maybe sit down with a cup of coffee and just see how everyone's doing, because you know, it's been a couple of years for me since I've done a Thanksgiving dinner with the whole pandemic thing. I don't know how your Thanksgivings the last year or two have looked, but you know, I feel like maybe I'm a little out of practice, or I need to prepare myself mentally for this. So I'm going to go through a few things that are going to help me do that and hopefully help you do that too. And then, of course, I already talked about it in the title. We are going to be talking about gravy in a minute too, which to me, if I'm being completely honest, is the most important thing on the Thanksgiving table. I mean, turkey, that's a given. But like turkey is 1A, gravy is 1B for me, and I guess mashed potatoes are 1C. All right, first things first, the show notes for this episode will be over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/199. So when I talk about gravy, I'll have a couple of recipes to share, but I'm also going to go out and gather up a few for you to take a look at as well. I mean, you know, there's 2 bazillion recipes Thanksgiving related on the internet. So I don't really need to recreate the wheel here. You probably already have your favorite recipe. So I'm going to share some tips for making your gravy turn out the best it can be when we get to that. But I'll put everything in the show notes again at kitchencounterpodcast.com/199. If you'd like to reach out to me, you can send an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast. I'm also on Facebook, of course, Instagram. I lurk around Twitter. All of my handles and everything are in the show notes. Hey, also don't forget that the Kitchen Counter Podcast is part of the Nitty Grits Podcast, which is a network out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum down in New Orleans. To find out more about the network, the other great shows, and the museum, head over to southernfood.org. All right, no time to spare. Thanksgiving is right around the corner. Let's jump right into it. Well, I said in the intro I'm going to talk about gravy, and I am, but we're going to do that sort of in the second part here. I want to talk for a minute first about some non-cooking related things. Well, I guess that's not true. Some of these are cooking. I'm not going to talk about specific recipe type things. You know, some of us have been cooking Thanksgiving dinners for a long time, and we have our rhythms and our ways and our favorite recipes and methods and things like that. Some of us may be brand new and maybe hosting a Thanksgiving dinner for the first time this year. Perhaps the events of the last couple of years with the pandemic and everything have changed the way Thanksgiving happens for you or your family. So I thought it would be kind of nice maybe just to sit back, relax a little bit before the big day, clear our heads, and maybe I could just offer some advice, admittedly advice that even I sometimes forget to follow, but I want to offer some advice that maybe will make life a little bit easier on the big day, on Turkey Day, because I know it's a stressful holiday for a lot of people without the food component involved, right? If you're cooking for a big crowd or even a small crowd for Thanksgiving dinner, it feels like the bar is a little bit higher, right, for a home cook. So that adds stress anyway, but take that out of the picture. And there are probably a lot of other reasons, around the holidays that people carry a lot with them. And so there's no reason that the cooking has to be a huge addition to that. So let's just sit back, have a cup of coffee, have a cup of tea, your beverage of choice, and go over a few things that are going to make life a lot easier for you, hopefully, when Thanksgiving Day or whatever day you're cooking your big dinner. And this isn't obviously Thanksgiving specific. This can be for any big cooking event that you're hosting people for and cooking a lot of food. But let's see how we can make life a little bit easier. And I mentioned in the intro, there's a, you know, countless recipes and techniques and articles and everything on the internet. So I'm not going to get too technical with food until we talk about the gravy part. But I do want, I just want to say one thing about turkey, because, you know, Thanksgiving, like, turkey is the elephant in the room, right? That's what everybody cares about. We all hear the legendary stories about how, like, the butterball or whatever it is, turkey hotline is, you know, people are calling it, which amazes me, because I guess that's preferable to Googling. I don't know. Anyway, so I just want to say one thing about turkey. If you do nothing else, if you know nothing else about turkey, if you're cooking a turkey for the first time, if you've cooked it a million times, you need to know there's just really two things that you need to take away about cooking a turkey. One is you don't want to undercook your turkey, because that's really bad, right? That's a food safety issue. And you also don't want to overcook your turkey. While overcooked turkey is edible, it might not be enjoyable because it might get dried out and, you know, chewy and jerky. And so you don't want to undercook it. You don't want to overcook it. And the one big takeaway here is if you can, if you have the means, if you have one available, if you can borrow one, you really need to get your hands on an instant read thermometer. Like a digital one works great. They're relatively inexpensive. And really, they're the single best way to know that your turkey is cooked to a safe temperature, 165 Fahrenheit. So you don't undercook it, and you can pull it out at that point, and you don't overcook it. Otherwise, you know, if you use the little plastic pop-up things that come in some turkeys, those are kind of worthless, I hate to tell you, because they're usually way late. It's way over 165 before those things popped up. You know, methods like, do the juices run clear in, you know, if you cut it, or does the joint of the thigh and leg move easily? I mean, those are, in a pinch, I guess they work, and you can always cook it a little bit longer to be safe, but then that's why you end up with dry, overcooked turkey. So get an instant read thermometer. You can buy inexpensive ones on Amazon. Most grocery stores or places like Walmart will have them in their like kitchen utensil section, you know, where you go buy a new spatula. They'll almost certainly have a relatively inexpensive thermometer that will work just fine for this purpose. Even better if you can get one with the wire probe, so you can have it in the turkey all the time while it's cooking with the little temperature thing on the counter. Or if you're really fancy, some will even interface with your smartphone through Bluetooth and an app. But you don't need to be that fancy. Just the simple ones will work fine. And by the way, I did a whole episode on turkeys a couple years ago, so I will link to that in the show notes. So we don't have to go into all that here and be repetitive about it. So that's all I'm going to say about turkeys. Don't undercook them. Don't overcook them. The best way to do that is with a thermometer. That's it. All right, that's out of the way. Let's talk about a few other things here. And I've probably talked about these in different ways before in other episodes, but they are worth going through again and putting them together in sort of a little bit of a mental checklist and a preparation checklist for the big dinner. If you're new to Thanksgiving dinners, or if you feel overwhelmed, or you just kind of feel like you don't really know what's going on or what you're doing, you're kind of winging it, whatever. The first thing to know is that you got this, so it's going to be fine. Mistakes will be made. Food will be eaten. Jokes will be shared. Arguments will happen. It's all part of the deal, right? But it's going to turn out fine. So don't stress too much about the food. Just, you know, do things to the best of your ability, and everyone will be grateful for the food on the table. Because, you know, while the food is a big deal on Thanksgiving, it really is secondary to, in my mind anyway, it's secondary to being with family, to being with your friends, to maybe reconnecting after a year or more of being away or not connecting in person. That's the important part here. So the food to me this year is almost secondary. Good food is a bonus. It's all gravy, right? Above and beyond the other stuff I just mentioned. So first of all, you got it. Now, a lot of mistakes that come on Thanksgiving dinner stem from, in my experience anyway, taking on too much. It is really easy when you're menu planning your Thanksgiving day, and hopefully you're doing that, you're planning ahead on what you're going to be making. It's really easy on paper and in your mind to you know, you're going to make a turkey, you're going to make mashed potatoes and gravy and maybe candied carrots and maybe mac and cheese and green bean casserole. So I'm going to deep fry some Brussels sprouts. You know, you've got all of these things you're going to do, and it's going to be a magnificent dinner, right? But when it comes down to executing all that, it is extremely complicated. And especially if you don't have a lot of help to pull all of this off, right? It's going to be very difficult to do. If you have help, if you can recruit other family members or friends to help prep and cook, that's great. But simplifying really is an easy way to, you know, up your chances of success for the big dinner. So, you know, instead of having 8 side dishes, maybe you only need 3 side dishes and you just make more of those side dishes so there's plenty of food to go around. It makes life easier in the shopping, in the prepping, in the cooking, in the serving, in the leftovers, simplifies it all the way around. Now, if you like to make a lot of side dishes, that's cool. I'm not saying don't, but just think about your menu and are there ways you can simplify it to make life a little bit easier when it comes to cooking. Now, another thing that can make life a lot easier on you on the day of is the work you do the days ahead of time, like even starting today. For example, prep ahead as much as you can. A lot of your side dishes can probably be made a day or two ahead of time and reheated for Thanksgiving dinner. You can prep your veggies in most cases the night before, you know, put them in Ziploc bags or airtight containers in the fridge until the next day when you need them. So you're not spending time doing a lot of prep work the day of Thanksgiving. I'm going to even talk in a minute when I get to the gravy part of this episode. I'm going to talk about making gravy ahead of time so you don't have to worry about trying to land that component right at the last minute when dinner's getting put on the table. So there are a lot of things you can do ahead of time that, again, will just make your life a little bit easier on the big day. Because, you know, one of the things that happens with me personally, especially if I don't follow a lot of the advice I'm giving you now, is that I will be so busy cooking. People are showing up and mingling and talking and having, you know, good conversations. And I'm stuck in the kitchen cooking because I can't really, I mean, even if I have help, I can't really do anything else because I'm trying to get all of my food done for dinner, right? So it's great that other folks are going and, you know, maybe having a glass of wine or some tea or, you know, sitting on the couch and catching up after a long time of not having seen each other face to face. I'd like to do that too. And the way I can carve out a little bit of time to do that is by getting some cooking done before the day of the dinner. So when you're looking at your recipes, most recipes will tell you, especially if they're Thanksgiving related recipes, if they can be effectively done early, frozen, or put in the fridge for a day or two or three before Thanksgiving dinner and reheat it. So look for that. Try to take advantage of that if you can. I know it's not always feasible, but if you can do it, it's a good idea. All right, this next one, I typically do this the day before or the first thing the morning of dinner. Although if you have a very complicated thing going on and you're working on food days before, you could certainly start this days before as well. But I like to make a schedule for what I need to do on, in this case, Thanksgiving Day. This is sometimes called a production schedule. And simply what I do, and there's, I don't know, there's probably even templates for this online. And this is something that caterers and food industry professionals use a lot too. But essentially what it is, it's just a list of all of the things that need to be prepared and cooked and served that day. The way I do it is I make like 3 columns. On the left column is what the food is, with the, you know, the turkey, mashed potatoes, whatever. On the next column, I like to put notes about it, like, is it in the oven? Is it on the stovetop? Is someone bringing this dish? So if someone is bringing stuffing, for example, and you don't need to cook it, I still like to put it on my schedule and say, like, Aunt Susie's bringing the stuffing. So I know it's accounted for, but, and I also know that I don't really need to do anything. Maybe I need to heat it up in the oven when she gets here. So I write that down. And then in the last column, I like to put at what time, at the top, I like to put what time dinner is and work backwards. And then I order all of my dishes based on essentially when I need to start them. So usually on Thanksgiving Day, one of the early things generally you need to start will be the turkey itself. So that goes down. I say, like, you know, if I look at the size of my turkey and I calculate it's going to take about, I don't know, let's say 3 hours for my turkey to roast and dinner is going to be at 5 o'clock. Well, I just work backwards, right? So 5, 3 hours, that's 2 o'clock. I probably want the bird to rest for 20 or so minutes. I need a little time to carve. So let's add another 30 minutes onto that. So in that case, I know I really need to get my turkey in the oven about 1:30 that afternoon, right? That's going to give 3 hours of roasting time and then a half an hour for it to rest and to be carved up to get on the table at 5 o'clock. And the reason this is helpful is the day you're trying to do all this, it's impossible to keep all this in your mind, right? I mean, it's just some people can do it. My mom did it that way and it all seemed to work out. I can't do that because I will forget things. I will be, you know, putting things, having people put things on the table, and I'll be like, oh my gosh, nobody made the carrots, you know, just because you get busy and you forget to do these things. Well, if it's on a schedule, I know I need to do it. And in fact, if it's on a schedule, it makes it even easier for me to delegate. If people are there to help, I can say, oh, you know what, we need to peel potatoes. Could you do that for me? And then when you're done, just put a little checkbox there. I mean, it sounds very planny, organized. It's not. It's just I do it because I'm not super organized in that way. Even if you don't go through the exercise of all of the components I mentioned on that schedule, even if you just write down all the food you're making that day, that alone can free up some brain space to worry about the tasks at hand. So for me, that's one of the most helpful things I do on the day of Thanksgiving. I know there are probably 50 more things I could mention, but to me, these are the high level things that I try to remember every time I'm cooking for a group of people. You know, if you've been doing this for a long time, you probably got all this. If not, I hope this is helpful, or maybe it brought a technique or an idea to you that you can put to use here in a few days when you're doing your own Thanksgiving dinner. But most importantly, as I mentioned, just remember the food is going to be secondary. This really should be about being with people you love and reconnecting, enjoying the good food that happens to be there on this day, and really savoring what feels maybe a little bit normal compared to how it's been for the last couple of years. All right, let's talk about gravy. Gravy is a very simple thing, but I find that it causes a lot of anxiety for home cooks. It's an easy thing to put together, but it does require attention and focus. And it's something that really is kind of hard to pull off in the heat of the moment, because typically at a Thanksgiving dinner, the gravy comes after you've taken the turkey out of the oven and you're just kind of getting everything ready for the table. Gravy is one of the last things usually that comes together. And if you're trying to make gravy and make it turn out right and the right consistency, well, you've got to, you know, land this plane right at the right time, it can be very stressful. And I understand that. For me, I think gravy is my favorite part of Thanksgiving dinner, because I really don't make gravy all that much throughout the year, but it's kind of a non-negotiable on Thanksgiving, right? I mean, you kind of have to have it. And I think back to my mom. My mom made amazing gravy, and you know, she was the one who would take the roasting pan out, and you know, after you take the turkey out, they'd put the roasting pan right on the stovetop and make the gravy right in the pan, right? And it would always turn out amazing. And it took me a long time to figure out how to do that. And like I said, it's stressful to do. But I've come to the realization in the last couple of years that it's not that bad to make your gravy ahead of time, which you might be wondering, like, how would you do that if you haven't roasted your turkey yet? We'll talk about that in a minute. But you can make your gravy ahead of time and just reheat it when you're ready to serve it. And my gosh, it's delicious. And you know it's good because you made it ahead of time and nailed it, right? So you're not worried about your gravy not turning out at the last minute. And it just makes your life a lot easier. So let's talk about how you can do that. So first of all, what is a gravy? Well, gravy is simply a sauce that's, by definition, gravy is a sauce that is flavored with meat drippings, which is such an elegant definition, but that's what it is. There are many ways you can actually put a gravy together. I mentioned my mom would take the pan, right, after she took the turkey out of the roasting pan, and she would make a pan gravy right there on the stovetop by using the drippings and the juices from the turkey. She would make a flour and water slurry. That's where you mix flour and water together until it's kind of like a almost like the consistency of a cream, right? Like a heavy, a whole milk or a cream. You'd mix that into your liquid, whisk it in as it heats and simmers, it thickens up. That's one way you can make a gravy. You can do the same thing, but you're just incorporating the flour ahead of time by making a roux and then adding the liquid to the roux. And as it simmers, it thickens up. You can do it that way. You don't have to use flour. You could use cornstarch to thicken your gravy as well if you don't want to use flour. But in general, it's a sauce that's flavored with meat drippings, and then it's thickened somehow, right? And we all know what gravy is. That's essentially how you make a gravy. And usually when you're making a gravy at Thanksgiving, there's not enough liquid in the roasting pan that you can make enough gravy for everybody. So usually you're supplementing that with a stock, probably, right? So you've got some liquids from the turkey, some drippings. It's probably very fatty. So maybe you're separating that in a fat separator or something like that, or skimming it off the top. And then you're adding stock to that to give it, you know, more volume. So there's enough to go around, and then you're thickening that. So my favorite method of making gravy ahead of time is I like to use the roux method with flour. I like to use a good quality stock. If I'm lucky, I've made turkey stock ahead of time and I'm using that. Otherwise, a good quality boxed chicken stock will work. If I'm making a vegetarian or a vegan gravy, of course, and I'm going to talk about that too in a minute, but you would use something like vegetable broth, obviously. And then I make that, and you know, flour-based gravies freeze really well. So if I'm not just making it a day or two ahead of time, I could make it a week or a couple of weeks ahead of time, throw it in a freezer-safe container, freeze it, and just gently reheat it on the day that you need it, and it works out great. So I'm going to walk you step by step through that process. One other thing too, I want to say, if you're using homemade stock, you've probably flavored in a way that you like it. If you're using a quality boxed stock, or even a stock that's from a can, or, you know, whatever it is, really, I would recommend that you just pump up the flavor of that stock a little bit before you make it into gravy. One way I like to do that, and if you're making this ahead of time, there's time to do this, is I will take a box of stock. So let's say just a box of chicken stock, which is usually a quart, which is 4 cups. Okay. I will take my saucepan, and before I do anything with the stock, I will cut up a small onion or maybe half of an onion, dice up a carrot, dice up a rib or two of celery. I will throw those in the saucepan with just a little bit of olive oil on maybe medium heat, and just let them cook a little bit till they soften up, till they take on a little bit of color. By the way, you can add really whatever you want. You could add fresh herbs and things like that. I'll put the stock into the saucepan with that stuff at that point and simmer it, bring it up to a simmer, and let it simmer for about a half an hour. And it's really going to pump up the freshness and the flavor of whatever stock you're using. Sometimes I even do that with stock I've made, if I've made sort of a less flavorful, more neutral stock base. So then I just take that, I run it through a fine mesh strainer. So I strain out all of the solids. I'm just left with the stock that's been fortified with the flavors of, the mirepoix, the carrot, celery, the onion, whatever herbs, things like that, that I've had in there. It's going to be a lot more flavorful. So I have that set aside in a bowl or something. I will take that saucepan that I just use. I'll wipe it out so it's dry. And then I'm going to start my roux in that saucepan. Now, a roux is also a very scary thing for some folks, but I am here to tell you that this gravy, the roux, is very simple because you don't have to cook it for a very long time. So there's less opportunity to mess up your roux. But a roux is simply equal parts of a fat and equal parts of a flour. And in this case, I'm just using all-purpose flour. For a gravy, I personally like to use butter as my fat. You can use really any fat that you want, whether it's animal-based, like bacon fat or chicken fat drippings or whatever. You could use olive oil. You can use really any oil as well, as long as it's equal parts of the fat to the flour, and it doesn't have to be perfectly precise. I just measure mine out with tablespoons, essentially. And how much roux you need really depends on how thick you want your gravy. So for a quart of sauce or gravy, I like mine medium body. I don't like it really thin where it just runs off a spoon. I don't like it really thick where, like, if you pour it, you know, some sauces are so thick you pour it and it like holds its shape. You can like see the pore lines in it. You know what I mean? That's not like how I like my gravy. I like it right in the middle where it just coats everything nicely, but it still runs nicely and flows nicely. So for me, that would be about 4 ounces of roux per quart of liquid. And by the way, you can redo, if you don't need a quart of gravy, right? You can, you know, cut it in half and use a couple of cups, just cut everything else in half in this recipe, right? So 4 ounces of roux per quart. Now, what you do is you heat your saucepan up medium heat, put your fat in. If it's butter, you want to let it cook for just a minute or so until it stops foaming. That's that lick, that's the water really that's in the butter that's coming out of it. Once you get to that point, after a minute, you add your flour. Now, for 4 ounces of roux, that would be 2 ounces of fat, 2 ounces of flour. Keep in mind that 1 tablespoon is roughly 1/2 ounce. So to get this, for example, you need 4 tablespoons of butter, 4 tablespoons of flour. That's 8 tablespoons, 4 ounces. Okay, I'll put all this in the show notes too, so don't worry about remembering this. So I like to use a whisk. I whisk my fat, my flour together. It'll probably have a kind of a sandy, clumpy consistency. I'm gonna keep mixing over medium heat until my flour just starts to take on a little bit of color. I want to cook off that raw flour taste. So I don't want it to get dark. So we're not cooking this for like 10, 15, 30, 40 minutes like you might for a gumbo or something. I really only want barely a blonde roux. So we're probably talking 5, 6 or 7 minutes. At that point, it's just a matter of adding back in your stock that you've got reserved back into that saucepan with the roux a little at a time, maybe 1/2 cup at a time, stirring. And at the point when you get everything added back in, just bring it up to a simmer and it will start to thicken up. And then you'll see your gravy come together. Although technically, it's not a gravy yet. It's really a velouté, one of the mother sauces, because we haven't put any meat drippings in it. So technically, I guess it's not a gravy, but whatever. After it thickens to the point you like it, you're done. Your gravy is ready to go. Now, if you were lucky enough to have your own stock, or perhaps you've got some turkey parts you can roast up and get some pan drippings the day you're making your gravy, you could certainly put that in there ahead of time as well. So you really get the Thanksgiving flavor, right? The roasted turkey flavor. I actually bought a couple of frozen turkey necks to make stock, and I roasted them off first and reserved some of the drippings from those to put in. If you don't have any of that though, you can still take your pre-made gravy and add in the drippings on the day of Thanksgiving as you're reheating the gravy to give it that flavor. It's really a very simple process. And at this point, you cool down your gravy, you throw it in the fridge for 2 or 3 days until you use it, or up to a couple weeks in the freezer. And then you just gently reheat it the day you need it and you're good to go. Now, if this sounds like a lot of work, I mean, it is kind of some work, but imagine doing it during Thanksgiving when you're trying to get everything together. For me, I think making it ahead of time is a pretty good trade-off. And again, you can really work on the flavor of your sauce so you know you've nailed it before you put it up for storage. So I don't know how many times I've made a gravy in the heat of the moment, and it was okay. It was missing something. I couldn't quite nail the flavor, and it's good. But you know, if I just had 10 more minutes, or if my mind was a little more clear to work on this, I could probably make this great. But hey, everybody's around the table and they're ready to eat, so let's go. Now, I also have a recipe. I'm not going to go through it because the process that I just mentioned is virtually the same, but it's a great vegetarian, actually it's a vegan gravy recipe where I'm actually using vegetable stock, of course, dried porcini mushrooms, and soy sauce. And then instead of butter, I'm using just some light olive oil for the roux. And it makes a really, really rich, really satisfying and savory gravy that, again, you can make ahead of time. And you don't have to worry about meat drippings, obviously, because we're not doing that for a gravy like this. But you know, you do the roux the same way. You're just using oil instead of butter. And the way the mushrooms factor into this, you know, that hack I mentioned when you take your stock and you're cooking up some carrot, celery, onion in that stock. Well, I like to put in about, for a quart of gravy, about an ounce of dried porcini mushrooms, and they will add this incredible rich flavor and color, and then I supplement that with a little bit of soy sauce, and you can adjust it to your taste. I would say at least a tablespoon, maybe two for a quart, and you really do end up with this very deep, rich tasting stock that's vegan. And, you know, I almost sometimes prefer the flavor of it to a meat gravy. It's just really good. And, you know, a great alternative for folks who might be at your dinner who either can't or don't want to eat a meat-based gravy. Now, just a note, if you don't want to use flour, I mentioned you can use other thickeners like cornstarch is probably the most available one. You don't make a roux with cornstarch. It doesn't really work. So you'll need to make a slurry. And again, a slurry is, in this case, would be a mixture of the cornstarch and a little bit of cold water or a cold vegetable broth mixed together until you have, you know, the cornstarch in liquid form, and then you can pour in. And you're going to need at least a tablespoon of cornstarch for every 2 cups of stock. So you probably want to start with a couple of tablespoons of cornstarch in a slurry in order to thicken. And as the liquid heats and simmers, it will thicken up, and you're going to want to cook it a little bit, you know, a few minutes at least, to let that raw cornstarch flavor cook out. You can do the same thing with flour, by the way. You can make a flour slurry, pour it into your liquid, and as it heats and cooks, it will thicken and cook off that raw flour flavor. So something to keep in mind if you don't want to use flour, can't use flour, to thicken cornstarch is a pretty good alternative. Although I will say, I don't think cornstarch thickened sauces freeze quite as well as flour thickened sauces. So if you're going to go the cornstarch route and you want to make it ahead, maybe make it the day before and reheat it so you don't have to worry about your sauce, your gravy not looking so great when you thaw it and reheat it. So did that all make sense? Did all that gravy talk make sense? I feel like I kind of rambled on about gravy. I'm passionate about my gravy. I think once, if you've never made gravy, or if you rely on other things to help make your gravy, like, you know, add-ins or, look, by the way, full disclosure, I have eaten my fair share of instant gravy. I like it. I'm weird. I get it. But, you know, obviously homemade gravy is, you know, an order of magnitude different, usually better. So I, you know, I've eaten it all and I like it all, but if you haven't done it before, give it a shot. I think you'll be very pleased. And by doing it ahead of time, you'll be able to have a better product with less stress on the day of the big dinner. So that's my Thanksgiving wisdom for this year. As I said, I'm excited to be able to have a somewhat quote unquote normal Thanksgiving, or like a pre-pandemic type of a Thanksgiving. It's going to feel like it did before all of this happened, right? For me, I hope you're finding some way to celebrate Thanksgiving that's comfortable for you. I hope you're doing okay. I know you can handle this. And if you're charged with cooking your family's Thanksgiving dinner, you got this. It's going to be great. Once again, the show notes for this episode are over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/199. Feel free to send me an email or to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com, or find me on Twitter at TKC Podcast, on Instagram or Facebook at Kitchen Counter Podcast. And over at the Nitty Grits Podcasts out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum at southernfood.org. Well, that'll do it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I hope you and yours have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. And until next time, happy cooking.